Hello.
This is the Sexual Inclusion Network. With your host, Christiane Bella. Sin is in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sexual Inclusion Network. I am Christiane Bella, and tonight my guest will be Renee Burwell of Pandora's Awakening. Renee is in the process of working on a course in coaching on sex and race and how to have these important conversations. So, Renee, are you there with us? Renee? Hello? Oh, Renee, why can't I hear you? Okay, hopefully Renee can try again to log in because I was not able to hear her. So, I had the pleasure of meeting Renee when we were working together for Sex Positive Nashville, and she has done so much wonderful stuff. In addition to that, she joined me when I was running the Intimacy Architecture Group to do a course and a discussion on specifically on a lot to deal with kink, sexuality. And let's see. Oh, let's see if we can get Renee back. Renee? Hello? Hello? I cannot hear you. And it says you're live, but it's lying to me. Mercury and motherfucking retrograde. damn it all to hell. Well, my only other suggestion to you, Renee, is to just call in via phone if the email link is not working. You can call in at 319-527-6205, and hopefully that will work. Otherwise, this sucks, and we don't have a show. so we are doing our best to get Renee up and running with us. It is just still not saying you're connected. No, I see you. I wish this had a way to call people out, like you. Let's see if we can try that, actually. Hoping for the best here. Trying a new method. Hello? Hello? Yes, Renee?
No, this isn't Renee.
Oh. Well, you're welcome.
I was
to
trying
chat
to
with
listen
Renee.
To the show, but I wasn't. This isn't Renee. I was trying to listen to the show.
Oh, okay. So you don't need to call in to listen to the show. You can call in and actually get to talk to us on the show. So if you have a story or anything you want to share, you're welcome to. Otherwise, to listen, you just listen in on blogtalkradio.com/sexualinclusionnetwork. And you can listen to us there, or you can listen and watch us on Facebook Live on Christiane Bella.
Oh, okay. So Facebook Live, Christiane Bella. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Okay. All right, so not Renee, but an awesome listener. Yay, thanks. I'm glad we have great listeners out there. So we are waiting for Renee to jump in and join us. And in the meantime, hi, friends out there in Facebook world. Hello, Lynette and Lauren and Dawn. Thank you all so much for watching. So, yeah, I mean, this, you know, I actually had planned to have Renee on long before the current state of affairs was what we know it to be, and you know, the deeper leveling up and expanding awareness of Black Lives Matter really became the thing. Hi, Robert, on the tip of everyone's tongue. Because like I said, I've worked with Renee for years since I moved here to Nashville 5 years ago and was working with Positive Nashville. So, I mean, I think for me, as a not person of color, I myself have certainly been faced with the challenge of like, what do I say? Because you don't want to fucking say the wrong thing. And of course, the key thing is really that it's not like there's really nothing for me to say following the lead. You know, that feels to me like my job right now. My job is to follow the lead of people of color and how they're asking us to show up as allies right now. And that is my main goal. And so I was really excited to get the opportunity to talk to Renee more about, you know, what it is that we can do to be having this conversation in a way that's really productive, but especially in the world of sexual health. I believe that people of color are fetishized and, you know, overly stigmatized, I guess, in some ways. You know, a lot of unhealthy stereotypes out there of people being more promiscuous or things, just a lot of negative stuff, I feel like. And, you know, just to really get to that place of being able to respect the empowerment. Hi, Emily. The empowerment of this voice saying, you know, it's so important to see us in all of our facets, as I think it's important for everyone to be seen for their most authentic self. And I'm not sure where Renee is. I'm going to see if I can find her another way. Because as much as I love to chit-chat and like hear myself talk, this is really about highlighting people of color. And I think the most powerful thing about Renee's work right now is here in Nashville, she is one of only, like, I think two or three women of color who are sex therapists, who are out there doing positive sexuality, having conversations about kink, having conversations about healthy sex, sexual identity, and exploring, you know, and healing your sexual self. So let's see if we can find Miss Renee. I hope everyone is having a great week, all things considered. There's a lot of crazy cosmic energy going on right now. And I know it is a lot to be dealing with for sure. Can I copy that? All right. So yes, currently right now, Jupiter and Pluto like are aligning in some way that's like super funky on top of Mercury being in retrograde. And like on July 4th, we're having a lunar eclipse and a full moon. So like it's been really like extra tricky, buzzy in the air. All right, so we are still waiting for Miss Renee to join us. Here we go. Let's see. Nope. That is not Renee. So yeah, Pandora's Awakening, I'll tell you a little bit more about Pandora's Awakening as we're waiting for our guest, is sex therapy and education to help break down the misconceptions and barriers that individuals and couples have with sex. The goal of Pandora's Awakening is to assist in changing the stigma and dysfunctional patterns and replacing them with holistic, healthy tools. And by doing so, you know, we have as a community, a healthier community mentally, and emotionally, where we can really enjoy our sex lives. Another one of Renee's superpowers is her, like myself, are trained in Kundalini yoga, which has been a huge part of my healing growth, as well as hers. And I know she's done some wonderful Kundalini classes and workshops around the second chakra, around our sexual health, as a way to connect to that whole self and spiritual side of healing, which I think is a really vital part right now, in any conversation we're having about healing, whether it's healing from what's happening health-wise in the world, whether it's healing emotionally from the transition and the waking up that we're going through as a collective society, is to really come back to spirit, whatever that looks like for you. And it's so important that we're breathing. You know, the breath is this one thing that we have that connects all of us. It doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter where, you know, where you are in the world. Economic status, like enough, like everything is equalized at the level of breath, you know, and the root word for inspiration is to breathe life into. And so I believe that in doing breath work, we're not only connecting to ourselves, but we're connecting to this like healthy state of our collective consciousness. And that's so important right now to remember that we are in this together, that we are all part of the same great whole presence of just living and being, and to really feel that, to feel that every breath is a blessing and a gift, and to enjoy and savor that. All right. Well, I'm not sure where our guest is, but we will just, you know, rock it and have our own conversation. So if you are out there, you know, obviously I'm very limited on what I can tell you, because, you know, I'm certainly not here to speak on behalf of others who are really navigating Black Lives Matter in the gut trench sense of it all. But, you know, I'm happy to talk to you about sex, and I can tell you my own personal stories. My first realization that there was a difference, or I should say that society perceived that there was a difference in who I dated based on race. I was probably about 12 years old. The movie Jungle Fever came out. So I was living in Brooklyn, and a real life incident happened in my neighborhood where an Italian kid from the neighborhood beat up an African American man in the neighborhood for dating, being seen dating this Italian woman that I guess he either liked, or I don't know exactly what his involvement wasn't that why he chose to do that, but that became, I was like, oh my God, that's fucking crazy. Like, and then the movie Jungle Fever came out, and that was essentially the premise of the movie. It was like, you know, this like Italian girl from Brooklyn falls in love and dates this African American man, and oh, here we go. Maybe this is Renee. I think this is Renee. Hello.
Hey. Hey. Hi. Sorry about that. I've been trying to get on, and I don't know what's going on. I put my name in, and then I don't know how to click get in. So, fortunately, I'm in.
It's all good. You are here now. I'm so glad you're here with us. So, yay! Welcome, everyone. This is Renee Burwell of Pandora's Awakening. I'm so glad you could be here. So, I know Mercury's in retrograde right now.
I'm glad you invited me. Again, I apologize.
No worries. No worries. So, I was actually just in the process of telling a story about the first moment in my life when I realized that society believed, or some people in society believed that there was an issue of dating and race, when I was probably about 12 in the movie, oh my God, that just totally escaped me. Jungle Fever. Thank you. that was my first, like, I was like, oh, that's like, it's a thing. Like, you know, that I guess I'm supposed to become aware of, because it had never occurred to me before. So do you have a moment where you remember it was like that light bulb turned on or something, or that like that shadow side was kind of shown of like, ooh, that's something people judge?
I think it's definitely very different being just in general African-American woman or black woman. I know everybody's calling people different things nowadays. And I think from a very early age, I was kind of introduced that race was an issue and that in some ways I'm supposed to fight against what most people will think of me, but to always be aware, like to not feel inferior, but recognize that other people will look at you as inferior was kind of my story growing up. So it's kind of a, because I always think like, what was my first time really thinking about race? And I remember my mom, she kept, well, all the kids in the neighborhood, we were all just kind of go over to each other's houses, but she kept one, he was a white boy. And he was like a year younger than me. So, you know, when you're young, you think that a year is like you're just so much more grown and older.
Right.
But I was probably at the time maybe 7 or 8. And he hit my sister with my Michael Jackson jacket. And I don't know if y'all remember Michael Jackson jackets with all the zippers on it. And so he did it kind of just on accident. But, you know, those zippers are zippers, you know. And my mom came out and whooped his butt. And I was just like, whoa, you can whip our butt, but you just whooped this white boy's butt. Like, oh, my mom's going to jail. And I don't know. Like, when I think about that, that's like one of the first real memories I have where I was just like, wow, my mom's going to go to jail because she hit this white boy. She can hit. And I mean, back then, I know a lot of people have issues with corporal punishment now, but back then that was just the way you punished. And I just was like shocked. My mom took that length with him. And that was like one of the times where I was just like, okay, this is an issue. This is going to be a bad issue for all of us. It didn't. I think his mom knew that he was a wild child. But and that it shouldn't have happened. But I remember that being like one of my first memories of like, okay, this is an issue. When Jungle Fever came out, I already knew Jungle Fever was an issue before the movie came out. But I don't know exactly where those discussions came from because I was probably – I was younger too and that came out probably I'm like, because I guess I'm like, you were 12, so I'm like, I think I may have been 7, 8, 9, maybe the same year of all, but I think it was like a little bit, I may have been like 8 or 9, but then at the same time when that movie came out, my father, my parents were starting to split up at that time, and he told me he had a new girlfriend, and she was a white Italian woman, and he's married to her now. But I just remember feeling so disgraced that my father would have Jungle Fever and be dating this white woman. And I was about 9 at that time, 9 or 10.
Wow. I can't imagine, like, the fear of thinking something bad would happen to your mom for, like, protecting your sister and for, you know, taking a stance there about behavior. And then to see, because I remember the part of that movie's message was this just appalling from the woman's perspective, like, sense of betrayal and like, how dare you? And I remember like there was a scene where she talks about like, and I'm light skinned and like, that isn't good enough. And it never occurred to me either. Like that there was this, I don't know, hierarchy or something amongst African Americans without skin tone even. Like, it was just like one of those movies where I was like, wow, my mind was just blown. Like, I had no idea this whole other world was happening. But tell me a little bit. So you started Pandora's Awakening. What was the inspiration for that?
So pretty much what I was thinking from, you know, throughout my life, I've kind of been curious about sex and sexuality. And in some ways, because of my upbringing, I was afraid to kind of expose my curiosity, if that makes sense, and the desire to learn and be educated. And it was because, you know, growing up, especially here in Nashville, I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, you know, anything pertaining to sex, especially as a woman,
it kind of lowered your power and your ranking in society in some ways. And then, and the judgment was just always hard and sharp in some form or fashion. So I was like, you know, I kind of want to know about sex and understand sex, but I know I'm supposed to be waiting till marriage. So I'm learning all of this so that I can be prepared when I'm getting married. So all of my friends would come to me asking me questions. I'm like, well, you know, you should wait till you're married, but you know, I hear this trick is great and this is good and this and that. And then I just kind of became the sex nerd amongst my friends. And then, you know, I eventually became an adult and did other things. And, you know, the whole virginity stuff, you know, is kind of different once you're I ended up leaving Nashville. So once I started leaving Nashville, I went to Spelman. And Spelman is a predominantly African-American school where I just was kind of reconditioned, or I don't even want to call it reconditioned. I was kind of unconditioned in the way of some of the things I was taught. And I still was thinking about sex and sex. And sorry, I'm giving you a little bit more about my premise because I'm kind of giving you my history. But you know, I just kind of unlearned some of the harmful things about sex, and I still wasn't ready at that point to actually begin Pandora's Awakening or go on that journey of doing sexual health. I mean, I did it in some ways, but not in a way where I was just kind of where people would know me as the sex person, because it was just like, this is something I know about, but I don't really want everyone to know about it because I don't want to bring shame on my family or onto myself. So years go by. I end up getting my master's in social work and some other degrees and things like that. And I was working as a medical social worker. I left Nashville for a while, went to California too, then came back, and I ended up getting a job as a medical social worker. And when I was doing medical social work, I would be constantly asked about different people's sexual health issues, you know, especially when I was doing long-term care mostly. So people were like, you know, my spouse has Alzheimer's. What happened with their memory? They don't remember that we just had sex an hour ago and they want sex again. You know, what do I do? You know, this person's in the nursing facility. They want to have sex with all the different people in a nursing facility. What do we do? Because that's not consensual. And not only that, but these people still are married and have other partners that aren't in the nursing facility. So it becomes very problematic. And there weren't any people who were having paralysis of different forms, who were young, you know, a lot of car accidents, mostly motorcycle accidents and guns. You know, they're like, you know, what do? I still want to be sexual. I still want to have partners. How do I find people who will want me as a quadriplegic? And these were all things that I didn't really have answers to. So I knew that being a medical social worker wasn't really my ideal. And I knew that being more of an entrepreneur, business mindset was that. But I was just like, what skills do I have? Because at that time I was still kind of trying to do more of the status thing, the honorable thing for what my family, what people felt was respectable. And I was just like, you know, at this point, you know, I'm grown. I'm very grown. It's time for me not to be worried about overcoming the shames of what my family, some of the things of my family, and just do what feels good to me and what calls to me. And I was like, you know, I've kind of always had a gift for helping people when it comes to clinical work, when it comes to mental health and therapy. And for me, I've just naturally am not a very judgmental person, because also another thing about my history is that my father was a heroin user. So growing up with that, most of my friends didn't know that at the time. And it was always like my secret that I held tight to was that my dad is dating this white woman and he's a heroin user. And, you know, it's just like all these piles of shame for, and also because I was like one of the few black people in my community, it was like, I already knew I didn't like that judgment. So when people tell me their stories about whatever they're doing sexually or otherwise, I don't give them that same judgment because I know what that feels like. So I was just driving down the street one day. So then I ended up deciding to look into the sex therapy route. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I already have the licensure to do therapy. Yeah. I've already had that experience. And then I decided to go to University of Michigan, and that's mm-hmm. where I got my sex therapy and sex educator certificate. Well, I started the education process more deeper than what I knew. And also mm-hmm. during that time, I was doing some bedroom candy party, which okay. is kind of like a consulting, you know, kind of like a sex toy party line,
yeah.
but it's
yeah.
more black facing.
Oh, nice.
So I was, mm-hmm. So Candy Burris from the Real Housewives mm-hmm. of Atlanta, she's the one that started it. And when I was doing those parties, it would be amazing how much misinformation and shame were coming out at these parties. Like, people would think their G-spot was in their anus. People would shame people for not being able to naturally lubricate. It was just a lot of misinformation and mm-hmm. a lot of shame on top of that misinformation. I was just like, you know, this is really the area I need to go into. And I kept thinking, I was like, you know, when I start my business, what name do I want to call it? And I was just driving down the street one day, and I was something just, I'm a very kind of holistic woo-woo mm-hmm. person. So as I was driving, Pandora's Awakening just came to my yeah. head. And it was just like, this is the name of your business. And I had all these other names, but that one, it just hit both. It hit my heart. And I was just like, you know, when it comes to Pandora's Box, you know, that's, some people look at Pandora's Box as virginity. When you actually look down deep in the box, mm-hmm. there's hope. Like, the exposure yeah. of the losing the virginity or opening the box is like all the disasters of the world and the universe. But if you really, but one thing that Pandora didn't realize was that there was hope at the very bottom of the box. And that's kind of how I shape my practice, is that I want everyone to feel like they have hope amongst all the chaos and disaster.
Oh, God, that's so good. I love that. I mean, so many great things out of your intro. I feel like we could go off on so many topics, but I feel like, you know I had asked you to do this show long before the current state of affairs was at the place where it is now. But I feel like, given what's happening, it's so important to really give a voice to that. And I know you're actually working on that right now. You're working on a coaching course of some kind that is mm-hmm. going to help people to have more conversations around sex and health. Do you want to share with us a little bit about where you kind of see that going and what that's going to look like?
So I have, you know, my Pandora's Awakening. So Pandora's Awakening is very much focused on mental health from a therapeutic mm-hmm. perspective. So when I look at therapy, you're diving deep into some of your past wounds to make sure you're moving forward. Coaching mm-hmm. is more present. So okay. If someone wants to come to see me as a coach, they mm-hmm. would just kind of give me some of their basic information. And then from there, I might discuss basic things that can help them along their sexual health process or sexual healing process. Mm-hmm. And also give them maybe some information on what to bring back to their therapist. So that would be kind of what that coaching format is. And then also I'm going to be doing different programs for allies when it comes to working with racial minorities, as well as when it comes to working with sexual minorities, and just kind of giving like an open space for people to just be able to talk and process what their thoughts and feelings are when it comes to some of the things that are going on right now. I think a lot of people are trying to, the term that is, I hate all these coin terms, but everyone's diving deep, you know,
yeah.
and you're diving deep in who are you talking to about this information, you know, and mm-hmm. I think it's important for someone to feel safe talking to a person of color about yeah. whatever they're feeling, whether it may be offensive or not, and be able mm-hmm. to evaluate their feelings and thought process. And that's going to be more of a group setting. So some of the people in the group may have thoughts that may conflict too, but I want to provide like a safe space to kind of really talk about the information that's being learned.
I love that. I know you were already doing, and maybe you still are, it was specifically for women of color. You were co-hosting that with a mutual friend of ours. to really provide a space for women of color to be able to have these conversations about their health and their sexuality. Is that still going on right now?
It is. And with that, I like to just give, you know, she is it's kind of went virtual, and then I'm kind of a little bit more hands off with it. I'm just kind of more of the, hey, I provide the space and give y'all the time to do that. So she's really the, I'm kind of just like the supporter of it.
That's great. And we'll be sure to put the links to all that in there. So I am also on Facebook Live now. I'm just going to kind of give you a little recap. A lot of folks chimed in that they had very similar experiences getting deconditioned in college, you know, having been told that, you know, they had to wait till marriage. If they had sex, they would get pregnant and could die. And then just really having these like epiphany moments to see that actually this was all like heavily exaggerated. So thank you for sharing that, because it really spoke to a lot of folks. And that, yeah, the reoccurring theme of shame. Do you feel like, I mean, sex alone has this shroud of shame. Do you feel like there's this extra hurdle as a person of color? Because like you said, even though you were raised to think like, no, I'm not, you know, inferior, but to be aware that there might be people who had that judgment. And so that there was like this extra bump in the road that you had to be cautious or, you know, at least like conscious of.
I definitely feel like there is an extra level of shame. And I think the reality of it is to be Black in this world, or be part of the African diaspora, but specifically Black in America, from a history of the enslaved, there is a layer of shame that's constantly there automatically. And then to think that, you know, if we really look at the history of those who were enslaved, we're talking about, you know, our bodies being used to breed, to not be our own, to not have own our own sexuality, to have our bodies experimented on in order to create gynecological procedures. You know, we were the ones that were constantly denied ownership of our bodies and autonomy over our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And we were denied access to financial income. So when you think about finances, you know, if you don't have finances is a source of power. So a lot of times when you don't have finances, you use religion as your secondary source, or your faith, because it's like, okay, I don't have money, but so what's my purpose in living? So my purpose in living is to know that there's a higher power. And then if you think about the constructs of what a lot of religious bases are, those religious bases are kind of, it has an added level of shame. So, you know, everybody's like, we're trying to be perfect because we want God to keep us here, and this is our purpose in being here. And, you know, people just want to be more protective of whatever the religious belief system is, because that's where they feel like their power and their purpose is. I hope that makes sense.
No, it does. There's like this sense of spiritual currency, that this sense of value, you know, that people weren't getting from other human beings, but that you hoped, you know, you were having this relationship with God, and God still valued you, and so you were going to live up to this certain standard, and you know, to in that the idea of like the good grace of that. So yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And so I feel like, you know, and I kind of said this at the beginning, that myself and I feel like I'm not alone. A lot of people who want to be allies are just like kind of laying low, because we're like, you know, I definitely feel like it's my job to listen now and not say anything. And I definitely don't want to say the wrong thing. You know, and like you were saying, like right now there's kind of this debate. I was like, is it African American? Is it Black? Do I just ask you, like I would ask someone, you know, how I didn't always used to ask people what their pronouns were. I've only started doing that in the last few years when I became aware that that was a respectful thing to do. Is that something, you know, should I check in with someone and say, like, you know, do you have a preference? Is there, you know, is it a similar conversation, do you think, about really talking about what does this particular person in front of me need, because it may not be a universal thing.
I think that's a difficult question for me to answer, just because I remember back in the 90s where people were saying, don't call me Black, call me African American. Mm-hmm. So then to now be in 2020 and people were like, don't call me African American, call me Black. Mm-hmm. And part of me, I do think it's probably, it's in essence, it's probably the most appropriate thing just to ask somebody what they want to be called. Mm-hmm. But I think majority of the time, most people just want to be called by their name. And
right.
I think that's probably more important than anything else. And I think it's hard for me because, I understand the language of all of it, because to me, I feel like even though I'm Black, being African-American isn't inaccurate, because I am part of the African diaspora, you mm-hmm. know. So I don't see anything wrong with calling me African-American, but the reality is I'm not Nigerian-American. I'm not. Well, maybe based on my DNA, I might be a little bit Nigerian American, Belize American, but Setswanan, you know, I'm not. You get what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah, yeah,
I think there's definitely a lot of layers to it. And I think right now, I don't think most people know what to call anybody.
Mm-hmm. No, and so like you said, yeah, you know, just like, you know, share with me your name. Like, I want to, you know, see you. And I think that gives this sense of authenticity and I see you, you know, and to try to like get right to the heart of seeing just human to human, and remembering that connection. So have you felt called to go out and protest? I know it's been, you know, with everything else going on, a lot of people, just didn't feel safe doing that. Have you felt like, you know, where have you felt like most called to show up in the process of being heard right now?
Well, for me, I'm usually pretty active in protests in other ways. Mm-hmm. So this time I just felt like, given Corona, it's my time to just sit back and let people who are normally not out there yeah. doing this work, do the work. I have a loved one that is immunocompromised. They have, they've had a kidney transplant and things like that. So it's not really in my best interest to put that person at risk. So I have not been participating in the protest. I have been doing some writings here and there. And I will probably be doing more writings as it comes, cause I don't like to, I kind of feel like, it's probably not to the best of my service, but I'm not really someone that jumps while the fire is hot. I kind of wait till the fire dies down and people aren't really paying attention anymore. And I'm like, hey, remember, this issue's still important.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm going to try to jump still now, but I will probably start as things start to fizzle down and people start forgetting that these are issues. You'll see me write even more.
Yeah. That's so important. I mean, because if I think back, you know, I had my jungle fever, like, oh, wow, moment. And then there was like the Rodney King moment. And then was it like 2 or 3 years ago, the first time I remember hearing Black Lives Matter. And then I feel like, you know, there was this kind of, you know, it got pushed on the back burner. There seemed to be, you know, like whatever other current new social, you know, freak out over our shitty president or, you know, whatever, all these other things. And now it came back like with a roar, you know, and so it is so important to keep that conversation going after the limelight kind of wears off. Cause you know, there's obviously people who, you know, feel struck and jump in head first. And I mean, that's, you know, that's obviously great if you feel passionate, but this is an ongoing conversation that is, you know, it never really stopped. And I think it's long overdue for it to really be heard, the magnitude that is being, you know, recognized right now. So I absolutely, like, that's amazing that, yeah, to just keep fanning those flames and keep, you know, bringing the awareness back that, you know, this didn't go anywhere just because it's not on the front page anymore.
Mm-hmm. Then maybe it will stay on the front page, you know, for a while, you know, but I haven't seen that happen historically. So I'm just, I'm hopeful that this is a different time and state because people are really taking notice to what happened with George Floyd. But unfortunately, these aren't stories that most people of color are unaware of, or most black people, black and brown people specifically are unaware of.
So one of the things I've been seeing more now than I think I ever have before is black trans women, you know, and people like acknowledging and you know, doing posts like say their name, know who, you know, that this is a really big issue. Obviously, you know, any person of color being, you know, killed is horrific. But that somehow because this idea that, you know, trans women, or, like trans people in general, are already having a hard time being like really respected and honored, that this again kind of adds that extra like challenge of people to kind of recognize and see. And do you see that being a big factor in a lot of this, you know, with regards to what's happening right now, is it's like recognizing the minority within the minority. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm trying to figure out how to answer this question in the most politically correct and appropriate way. I think in general it goes back to what we were talking about, religion, and how people believe that your currency is based on how well you at least show up within the religious realm, you know, because that's where your currency is. So I think for a lot of black people, there is tons of homophobia, there's tons of transphobia. And because of the simple thought process that they are not in alignment with what the Christ, biblical, and even we can look at the Muslim teachings are. So I think, unfortunately, black trans people, especially black trans women, are in some ways not looked at as fully they're dehumanized very quite often in the black community. And I think part of it is it, and it's not part of it, it still greatly stems from white supremacy thinking as to why the black trans community is not getting the recognition and honor that they deserve. But that's stuff that we have to still work on. And it's stuff that, you know, we have to work on within the black community, as well as I believe that I hate to say our oppressors, but our, you know, the people who have oppressed us and colonized us to have these type of conditioned thoughts have to kind of help with the deconditioning and the deconstruction of these homophobic, transphobic thoughts. And it's going to take a lot of time, but if you even look at the culture today, there's transphobia no matter what race you are across the globe.
Yeah, no, it is. It's another one of those like eye-opening things that I didn't, you know, and I'll totally own like my privilege, like, you know, from I was like, oh, you know, I thought that this seeing more of it represented in media, I thought like, oh, we're cool. Like, you know, people are like it's not this like dirty secret porn thing, like that, you know, like people are recognizing that these are human beings that like all of us, and they're having these experiences. And so it, you know, it was kind of like, oh shit, like that's a fucking problem for people. Like it's, you know, just because, you know, someone's a star in a TV show that, you know, is a trans person does not mean that this isn't a big underlying problem that we have in society. I was under the same delusion when we had Obama for president. I thought like, oh great, you know, we don't have race problems anymore. We elected a black president. This is awesome. Like, you know, isn't that a relief? And then it was like, oh shit, no, like you're so far, like that's no, not at all where we are. And I'm sure I'm not alone when it came as like a slap of in the face of like, oh fuck, like that means I'm like, I've been in this delusion of privilege and I had no idea. And like, okay, now what do I do? And just trying to like, and thankfully, I mean, I feel like so grateful, and I'm sure, again, I'm not alone there either. And the wonderful resources that people have come out with like books and blogs. And like you said, you're writing articles, just like, you know, it's out there to just educate yourself. And I see so many people just really like just rallying to get together, to have book clubs, to have these conversations, to really take that veil off and realize like, no, we have a lot of fucking work to do. And like what showing up as an ally really looks like. So as a mental health expert, you specialize in, and correct me if I get this wrong, is it ASACT? It's like a specific division of therapy that is very sex positive. Can you tell me a little bit more what that is, and for anyone who maybe hasn't heard that before?
Well, ASACT is, it's the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. It is a certifying body for anyone who wants to, it's a certifying body for sex therapists as well as sex educators. It is very intensive. It's a lot of work to get the certification. It goes into all aspects of sex positivity as well as sexual wellness. A lot more people are more aware of sex addiction therapists, and, that model is not, it doesn't really have a very strong sexual wellness or sexual health perspective. It's just very much addiction focus, which is like which is more on sobriety, which if we look at a sexual wellness perspective, sex is supposed to be, it's not supposed to be, it's a natural part of our humanity. It's our natural part of us being healthy. And that's what ASEC kind of stands for, is just the whole perspective of the humanness of sexual health.
That's amazing. And so another piece in the many wonderful hats that you wear is you're on the board of TNASH, which is the Tennessee Alliance for Sexual Health. Is that right?
Yes. And also with ASEC, I'm also the Mid-Continent representative. So if anybody were interested in becoming certified as a sex therapist or a sex educator, they can reach out to me, and I can try to work with them and try to make sure they get the best resources in order to get certified.
Oh, that's fantastic. Because you are one of the few, as far as I know, African-American women who are doing sex-positive therapy here in Nashville. Yeah, I feel like there is definitely a need for people of color to be able to hold space in that field of sexual health and mental health. So thank you for being a resource for that. So TNASH does, well, it used to do these awesome little lunch and learns. I know you guys took it online now, as so many of us have had to do. So do you have any TNASHs coming up right now that would be great resources for people that we should be on the lookout for?
Yes. We actually have one coming up on the 15th. Well, what we do actually, okay. I'll have to look at my calendar, cause I'm like, we changed it around, cause now we are going to be doing, starting in August, we're going to start having our workshops we're going to be virtual the rest of the year. So we're going to move it from, instead of before we were doing the third Wednesday of the month. So it was like a hump day in the hump of the month. So this month in July, I'm going to have the Vanderbilt LGBTQ Center talk about their services and all the things that they provide. And we're hoping that they're going to incorporate some of the information from the recent laws that were passed in Congress regarding, you know, working and being LGBTQ. So that's one workshop. So if you want to look us up, TNASH, T-N-A-S-H, just think about Tennessee Alliance for Sexual Health, you know, TN. it will have all that information. That's what this month's workshop is going to be about. The next month, we are going to start going into the first Thursday of the month, as well as the third Wednesday of the month. And I can't remember. I know one of them is going to be on working with people through who have sexless marriages and how to help them with that.
Right.
I can't think of what the one on the first, on the sixth is, but I definitely recommend everyone go to the website and look, check on that.
Yeah, so definitely. I'll be sure to put that in the comments as well, so everyone has all the resources they need. So we have about 10 minutes left here. It is a call-in radio show. If you want to call in the last few minutes, you're welcome to join us. 319-527-6205. If you have a story you want to share or anything you feel called to contribute, you're welcome to call in and chat with us. So, anything you could say to those of us who are trying our best to be allies, whether it is, materials or just, kind of an outlook from your perspective as, what we can be doing to show up and really show that we're allies and not just, write some cute post on Instagram. That doesn't help. I'm not knocking anyone who does that, but yeah, what else can we maybe be doing?
I think one of the things I think as allies of anything to kind of keep in mind is that our country is built on a bunch of isms, and we all have implicit biases, whether we like to recognize that or not. And it doesn't make you a bad person, but what it makes what you need to do is be aware that sometimes you are acting from a bias versus actually meeting that person where they're at. And I think with that comes, and this is not just for being an ally for people of color or sexual minorities, but just kind of making sure you're curious and asking questions and not trying to ask from a place of, examination, if that makes sense. Like, nobody wants to be treated like they're in a petri dish, but kind of like really wanting to connect with that person on a soul level,
right,
I think is important. Another thing that I think a lot of people, I mean, as we can see now in the media more often, people are being policed a lot, and we've always, people of color specifically, have always been policed. So instead of automatically assuming that someone's doing harm, actually going up to that person directly and asking questions and asking in a way that, asking in a way that's respectful, I think is important versus going to the higher ups, is an important aspect of being an ally, is like, stop policing us. Also start, I mentioned this at one of our workshops, but like really taking the time to be in minority spaces. You know, if you want to call yourself an ally and you've never been a minority amongst the people you're being an ally for, are you truly an ally? Because do you feel comfortable even being around the people you support? So going to, black churches or going to black events, reproductive justice events, it's important.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, no, that was one of the things that stuck with me. I mean, many great things came out of that that night, but that definitely, of being willing to go and like feel what that feels like and just really start to understand more because you're immersing yourself in that culture instead of being like, well, I invited you to my thing. Like, it's like, no, go show up and take part and really experience with those people that, like you said, that, that you're claiming to be an ally for. So sidestep just a little bit, because I think the world could use this now more than ever, is you also do Kundalini yoga, which is also something that was a big lifesaver for me that I feel has helped so many clients that I've worked with, not only with mental health stuff, but sexual wellness things. How did you get into Kundalini yoga?
When I was doing my journey of just trying to be more educated as a sex educator, as well as therapist, Kundalini yoga. I kept hearing that yoga was a great form of healing and helping people to feel more connected to themselves and feel more grounded. And as I was doing that, as I was telling people of what I was doing in the sexual health world, people kept mentioning Kundalini yoga. And I was like, I've never heard of Kundalini yoga. That seems so strange. You know, it seems like something white people do or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to kind of joke, but that is something that people will say. And the more I kind of did the research, like I said, I'm very spiritual in my own way. I'm very spiritual. And as I was looking into it, you know, it's kind of like once you start noticing it, all of a sudden it starts coming at you. So then all of a sudden I'm listening, I'm on the radio and someone's talking about Kundalini yoga. I'm in this place and someone's talking about Kundalini, you know, and I'm just like, I've never even heard this word before. And now everyone, I'm hearing about Kundalini yoga all over the place. And at the same time, so I decided to go ahead and look into Kundalini Rising, which is the Kundalini yoga studio here in Nashville. And within the next month, there was going to be a teacher training. And I already was trying to sign up for a yoga teacher training in general, just for just basic vinyasa. And then I was like, this is kind of very synchronicity that I'm looking for this, I'm finding out that they're doing an actual teacher training within the month. And they hadn't had a teacher training in Nashville in like either three or five years. And I was going to be part of like the first group that they were starting. And I was just like, oh, well, maybe this is meant to be.
Yeah.
And it just kind of worked out.
I love that.
And it is a very powerful healing modality.
I think especially for sexual health, because for those of you who don't know what the Kundalini is, it's this idea that we have this energy channel running up the spine that has these different points in us. Some people refer to them as the chakras, these like wheels of energy. And one of them is the sexual energy center, which is also a creative energy center. And the idea is if you can get all of these wheels moving and the Kundalini moving through that energy channel up the spine, everything just is in alignment energetically and mentally and spiritually within yourself. And so you can really show up in this like healthy place in your body, in the world. I feel like it's definitely been a huge help in my healing process. And it was one of the things I loved about your approach to therapy was that you were, you know, also giving people these tools and meditations and things, because I think it's so healing to talk about what's going on, but we need to do something to actually get into the nervous system to like move it at a deeper level. So I love that you marry that together.
And it's just very pelvic floor focused. It's very kind of reflective internally, which is all part of what you kind of need to get connected with your second chakra or your sexual energy.
Great stuff. So thank you so much for being here. I'll be sure to include everything, but for those of you listening, just to recap, we have been talking to Renee Burwell of Pandora's Awakening. Renee is also on the board of TNASH. She is an amazing sexual therapist, and she is out there having great conversations and creating programs and holding space for people not only to heal the stigma and dysfunction of their sexual health and really heal past those wounds, but also really looking at the role race plays in our sexual health and really helping you empower not only people of color, I feel, but anyone who you come across. I feel like you're just, you know, your empowerment energy is very contagious. So I'm very grateful that I've gotten to meet you. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. And also, I just want to give a quick shout out to Talisha Holmes, because she is the person that runs my women of, well, not my, she runs our women of color discussion group. And I just want to give that her a shout out, because whenever someone's doing good work, I like to make sure they're named.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you. Yeah, she is an amazing woman. So we'll be sure. I know Talisha was watching earlier on Facebook, and we'll be sure to put the links into that group. That is still meeting virtually. So So everybody can have all the resources, the stuff for the Teen Ashes Lunch and Learn, and I'll be sure that your website's in there so as more courses and classes happen. Oh, it dropped you at the last second. What the heck? Friggin' Mercury in retrograde. Bitch. I'm so sorry about that, Renee. But thank you all for listening. This is Sexual Inclusion Network. I am Christiane Bella. We have been talking to Renee Burwell of Pandora's Awakening, Healing Past Wounds and Restoring Hope. I wish you all the best. I wish you so much love and peace and joy and, you know, that we really do show up. Oh, she's back. She's back. Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me on the call. It happens. That's just how calls work, right?
But yes, thank you again so much, and I do appreciate the shout out to Talisha Holmes, and definitely, you know, so grateful for you being on the show and for just the way that you show up in the world. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we will be back next Wednesday, same time, same place, Blog Talk Radio. I'm Christiane Bella, and this is Sexual Inclusion Network. Once again, thank you to Renee Burwell, and blessings to you all. Peace be with you. Have a good night.